Hello everyone and welcome to yet another episode of the Daily Medieval Podcast. I'm here with Ben, my Game of Thrones House of the Dragon expert, and today we are back in it for episode 3?
Yes, episode 3.
Better late than ever.
Yeah.
So, let's kick it off.
Right, so what happened this episode? We went to the woods, had a little hunt. Rhaenyra's got attacked by boar, and then we then had her find the White Hart and not her dad, who killed just a random other deer, which took him too long to kill. And then we had the attack from Daemon on Kragos Crabfeeder.
Yeah, pretty much.
Anything else?
That was pretty much. I mean, when we look at...
We had a lot of character drama.
Yeah.
But nothing majorly.
So here's the question. First episode was, I guess... Or let's say, previous episode was kind of all about succession, I guess, or like that. What would you... Is there a theme, do you think, to this one?
No. Oh, no, it's about right to rule.
Mm.
I would say. Because there's a lot of symbolism in it.
Yeah.
So, like... You could really English teacher this and really overanalyze it and go like...
Is it a red door?
Like... Oh, is it a red door in Game of Thrones, actually? you could really, like, look into it and go like, oh, her killing the boar symbolizes something. The White Hart, the deer, definitely means something because it's meant to be, like... They've made it out to be, like, the royal thing in the King's Wood on the birthday of his oldest son. And he never actually catches it. She spots it and just lets it go. And then he also then fails to kill, which shows him as being a weak king, not necessarily the best king.
Yeah.
And then it shows her with a certain right to rule, which I'm not necessarily a fan of, but yeah.
But it's interesting. I mean, we've got a massive time jump coming soon. Yep. But this episode saw a minor time jump of a year.
Yeah, and we had a bit of a time jump in the last one of 6 months.
What do you think about all this skipping time?
I think it's the only way to really get the plot to go forward. Otherwise, it's just a lot of sitting around. This isn't the most eventful.
Yeah,
like this is in the book version of it. This is very much like they talk about like these 5 years in a few paragraphs.
Oh, fair enough.
They're not missing anything. No, not particularly. I don't look into the future ones episodes too much and really research them, but we should expect a tournament where we really start to see the differences in
another tournament.
And well, hopefully, yeah, unless they count this first one as the first tournament, but we need to have a way for them to be called the Greens and the Blacks.
Interesting. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
Get to talk about the Byzantines.
Yeah. Unless we're counting that first tournament as that, but I don't know.
Nah, surely not. So next things next is in the books.
In the books, yeah. So this hunt doesn't really happen. By this time, we've already got a lot more tension between Alyssa Hightower and Daenerys Targaryen. Not Daenerys, Rhaenyra Targaryen. There's already a lot of tension. Some people have already married, and some things have already happened, like with the whole relationship with Kristen Cole, that's already taken up a lot further ago. One thing that I forgot, which I don't think we're going to see, is the weird Daenerys and Rhaenyra's and Daemon have a weird little relationship, and that's the reason another reason Daemon gets exiled. So I'm not sure if we're going to see that or not. So we should expecting she's pregnant again. So Alison's second oldest son is only like 2 years older than Rhaenyra's oldest son, so we should be expecting her to have kids soon. The only thing I did have some stuff about the Battle of the Stepstones. So the army is mainly Daemon's in the books. The navy is all Corlys, so he's got a load of second sons, sellswords, just every kind of person that would be more interested in that. And he leads that pretty much by himself. And then Corlys Velaryon does the navy part. Pretty much.
Does it happen in the same way, the bit about him kind of receiving that letter, going solo?
No, so in the books he very much is supported by the king the whole time.
Ah, interesting.
He's financially supported by the king the whole time. Because how else is he paying, like, all the supplies and all the food and all the stuff for his army to run. There's not going to be that much to capture in the steppe zones. It's not a massively like industrialist area. And then he does end up becoming, well, we're going to see in the next episode, he'll become king of the steppe zones. We've already seen that in the teaser. It takes him about 3 years, and he rules there for about 3 years. And he does, in the book, he does mention him beating the crab feeder in single combat. But that's literally all we get. So they had a lot of room to move around stuff there. And then the only reason he gives up the steppe zones, because Daemon has been married this whole time.
Yes.
To a Lady Royce of Runestone. So he's been married. So the only reason he comes back is because he tries to claim her land.
I see.
Because he doesn't like it there. The steppe zones are pretty bad. Otherwise, in the books, the hunt isn't really mentioned. That's fine. I can't think of any real differences.
Now, I do
the only
have...
thing I was going to mention.
Oh yeah.
But I'll let you have your little question first.
No, I was going to say, I saw a thing on, I think it was Facebook maybe, about, you know that guy who had the, what's it called? The stone, what's the infection thing? The
Grayscale.
That's it, Grayscale.
Yeah.
Had a mask of the harpy.
Yeah. Okay. I've actually looked into that and watched an interview from the guy who plays him. Apparently he's the OG for that guy.
Okay.
So he's the one that wore the harpy mask first.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. But
and they're all copying him.
But what's the significance there? Why is he wearing it?
Because he's...
And then why are they copying?
So... Yeah, that's the question. So the reason the Triarchy, those three city-states originally allied together, was to take on Volantis, which is the major city in Essos, the only one, the biggest one left after the fall of the Valyrians. And they Volantis also is the major supporter of the Sons of the Harpy. So there's a kind of thing like, oh, he maybe took it, and then they, the Volantis maybe took it as a symbol afterwards, and then it...
Okay.
It's not the most, it's not a thing in the books that he wears the harpy mask. Harpies are a big significant significance in the whole culture of the Bay of Slaves, but he's not from, he's from Kairos.
Right.
So,
but it's another reference.
It's basically a reference. Yeah.
In each episode we've had some kind of reference back to Game of Thrones. What do you think about that?
I'm not necessarily a fan of them. I don't know, why can't it be a standalone show?
Interesting.
But yeah, especially because it doesn't make, that one doesn't make the most sense at all, to be honest. They've kind of like ham-fisted it in.
Yeah.
The one thing I was going to mention is, you know, at one point, Laurie Strong says to the king, it's a tradition to have annoying daughters. So, you know, Jaehaerys.
Yeah, not his, personally.
His granddaddy. So I got a list of all of his daughters and how they died.
Ooh.
So his oldest daughter, Daenerys, died at about 8 with the shivers, which is like a random cold thing. Then he's got Alyssa, who was Viserys' mother. She died in childbirth. She's actually like the least problem one. She's like a massive like tomboy. Fell in love with her brother. And then got Maegella, who became a scepter. And actually didn't outlive her parents, I don't think. Daella, very much like a child, very like, was scared of everything, scared of dragons, scared of people, ended up marrying an Aeryn and then dying in childbirth. He is Viserys' wife's mother, that's who she is. And then we got Sarah, caught having sex with a few knights, and then ran away and became a whore.
Oh,
and a few of her sons actually came to the council.
Oh, wow.
And then we got Viserys, very much like her older sister, like a party person, but knew her value a lot more.
See.
So she didn't let people have sex with her. She flirted a lot and they were worried about it, but they thought she was smarter, so she didn't do it. But she actually died racing a horse down a street and fell off and crashed while drinking.
Oh, gosh.
Then we got Gale, the youngest, became the queen's consort, like closest comfort after all, because she's the only child after all of her daughters died before she did.
Yeah.
And then she killed herself because a court musician.
So that, like, it's a issue of them all being too sheltered to a certain extent, but they didn't, according to the fake history books, no one knew that she'd killed herself until after Jahiri's died.
Right.
They'd said she died of an illness, but she'd actually killed herself. So I thought that was quite interesting.
No, definitely, yeah.
So, like, yeah.
Do you think his statement holds up?
About
the daughters being...
Having daughters, yeah. Well, even, like, Jahiri's, his sisters were very awkward to deal with.
Mm.
And then before that, there wasn't any daughters. Because he has an older sister who was queen, but then, because they decided to go to a male line, she very much becomes a kind of a threat, but not really.
Mm.
He's, like, strong enough to deal with her. But she goes around threatening noblemen with the dragon directly, and Jahiri's goes, you don't need to threaten them verbally, you just shout with the dragon. And he's like, you're causing issues. So it is a thing for Targaryen women to be very difficult. And then the other thing we looked at was Alicent Hightower, very clever and bright, a lot more scheming than I think she showed off to be, but I don't really mind that, to be honest.
Okay.
She wasn't ever friends with Rhaenyra. She was actually a companion to Jaehaerys, because Otto Hightower, her father, was the Hand of the King to Jaehaerys before Viserys. So when he was dying and very old, she kind of like cared for him. And then there's rumours of her having sex with him, and also having sex with Viserys before his first wife died. And then basically we're going to see her and Rhaenyra's fight over who's first lady of the realm.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. So that's our thing. Did we do Character of the Week now? Or?
No, with Dragon's Watch.
No, Dragon's Watch.
Because we have a new dragon.
Yeah, we saw Laenor Velaryon's dragon.
Yes.
I can't remember what it's called. Did I write it down? No, I didn't write it down, I don't think.
But it's a very cool dragon. Again, I like that.
Way too big for its age.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not an old dragon.
Oh, right.
So it's way too big, and Laenor, as far as we know, didn't fight in the Stepstones.
Interesting.
It was just Daemon.
But I liked that it was, again, like the others, different colour, different shape. Was it a different sound? I don't know.
We didn't get much of the clicky sound like we did off Daemon's dragon.
Yeah.
I think a little bit, yeah.
Sound. But it was...
But it looks like we're getting... It doesn't look too different to Rhaenyra's dragon. And so it looks like Daemon's is just the most different. And I'm hoping we see a few more different ones, but it looks like his is definitely... Yeah.
Do you think we'll see any more dragons? Because I know there's a fair few.
Yeah, so there's...
7, isn't there?
Well, in the book there's like 14.
Oh, right.
So at the end of the war... We've got Adam of Hull. We'll see if he comes up. We've got Hugh the Hammer. We've got these are the dragon riders.
Yeah.
We've got Daenerys has 4 children that ride. Aegon has a dragon called Sunfire. Aemon is riding Rhaegar. Daemon is riding a little blue dragon. We've got a demon. Daemon, the main dragon, Daemon is riding a little blue dragon. Daemon has 2 daughters that are riding dragon. Well, they don't both ride dragons at this time, but they both end up were dragon riders at different times.
Yeah.
So I think it's about 14 dragons we'll see, because they invite commoners to ride dragons.
Okay, interesting.
Because they want more dragons. There's a bunch of dragons sat around that don't have riders, because it's not enough Targaryens. Because there's literally so many dragons at this point in history. But I think including hatchlings, there's like 20, 25.
But doesn't that undermine the whole...
No, but they're fighting other people with dragons, so you just want as many dragons as possible.
Fair enough.
So yeah, like there's so many dragons at this point in history.
Yeah.
Like that. Some of them have had like riders that like Jahiri's and Alicent's.
Mm.
Their dragons are still around in the books. No one's riding them. They're just killing them. Yeah, then we loot. I nearly spoil things.
Woo!
I know who wins the war. I know what happens.
Well, if you've read the book, I guess it just tells you everything.
But it, what was it?
What did I say the other day? The British history, the thing with Stephen, William the Conqueror's grandkids when they were fighting for the crown. What's it called again? I brought it up the other day.
Oh, I can't quite remember.
If you know about King Stephen,
yeah.
If you know about that, you know how this ends.
Interesting. So it parallels history.
Very, very much, yeah. Okay.
Well, speaking of history, shall we get on to my section?
Yeah, we can.
So if we go back, because there was obviously a large part of the episode was about the hunt that happened in the Kingswood. Now, you'll be able to tell me a bit more about this. The Kingswood was, as far as I am aware, a very large deer park hunting ground owned by the king.
Yeah, so it's in the Crownlands, Glastormlands, depending on where you count it. Underneath the Blackwater, so other side of the river to the Blackwater is the Kingswood, and it is very large. There is some castles based in it, like it's not a complete like all woodland,
yeah.
But like there is some like settlements based in it, and there's people, and it is very much a place of brigands pop up there a lot.
Mm.
A lot of brigands pop up. Okay. Jaime Lannister fights them there when he's a young squire. So yeah, it is a very large woodland, not the biggest in the realm. The Wolf's Wood is bigger.
Okay.
But that's so north.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you could, because I mean, the world of Game of Thrones, I mean, it's obviously based on kind of the UK and Ireland in a way. How many kind of these type of parks do you think existed in the world of Game of Thrones?
Well, are you talking managed woodlands or just woodlands?
Well, kind of hunting ground, kind of deer park.
Yeah, so the Wolf's Wood is like where the Starks hunt a lot, and they do a lot of hunting there.
Yeah.
And then the Stormlands has a big woodland. The Riverlands has a few small ones. Mm. The Vale and the Westerlands, they don't have huge woodlands.
Yeah.
But they're still quite into hunting.
Mm.
But they're quite into hunting like mountain stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there is woodlands there. Yeah, so there is, it is very much a big culture thing in the Westeros, it is hunting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And maybe not many of the woodlands are mentioned, but if you ever look on a map you'll see little spots of them.
See, that's interesting, because by 1370 in England you had 3,000 parks in England alone. And people, doesn't matter what kind of background you had, apart from obviously the common people, if you had any element of kind of aristocracy, baron, even if you were a bishop, you could own a deer park of some relative size. And some people even owned multiple ones. We see, for instance, that, well, in Norfolk alone, we see 15 to 20 parks. We see in Lancaster also about 15 to 20. But of the 3,000 by 1370, John of Gaunt, the Duke of Lancaster, owned 46 personally. And so it's interesting that obviously, like we say, it's like the Starks had their hunting ground. It almost seems like one each in a way. Whereas in England, it was vastly different. There was a number of parks. Now, the reason for this is because parks, rather than being of a kind of function, they were very much so about the form, about an aesthetic, about what some historians call the medieval imagination. Because even in the medieval era was there this idea of the medieval fantasy that they kind of wanted to play into. And so you would have these parks that and it was all about kind of, I guess, in a very safe way, being able to tackle the kind of wild, the untamed beasts that were in it. And you would have deer, but also many parks were compartmentalized. So you would have arable farming in them, pastoral farming, you might have forestry, you might have fish ponds, rabbit warrens. It wasn't only deer and it wasn't only boar. Very different things. And you would also have within this as well what's known as a little park, which was specifically for women, and again played into this whole kind of medieval fantasy. It was to enable ladies to kind of bask in kind of flowers and meadows and, you know, the rolling hills.
We've seen that a bit with the castle woods, I think.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. So
yeah, of course, yeah,
yeah. Like every castle seems to, every major castle has one.
They may not have a heart tree, but they all have them.
Yeah, yeah.
Or wait, actually, most of them have heart trees, but they may not all be weirwood trees.
Mm.
And like they all have these woodlands, even like King's Landing, which is very new in castle form.
Yeah.
But at this point, like the Red Keep had only been built; it was finished under Maegor, which was the king before Jaehaerys.
Yeah.
So it's only been around for about 70 years, brand new castle, but they've still built this woodland in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is very much a thing of the old gods that we see, but it's been kept on as like a tradition.
Okay, that's interesting. And it's interesting as well, I mean, we see in the episode a kind of, along with the king, there's a kind of a whole cohort of people that join. And that was something that kind of happened. We see, for instance, with Henry III, you know, people were very proud of their deer pucks and wanted to show them off. Again, it kind of plays into this whole status thing, to kind of show someone your park and show them around. And so we see Henry III showing off his park to Gulcher de Châtillon, who was constable of Champagne in France. And it's funny because the Gulcher goes and visits these parks and then comments about how, oh, these are nothing like what we have in France. These are primitive, you know, rubbish little things. You know, we have these vast big parks. But in any case, it was all about this kind of status, and you had parks that would range from, you know, 20 acres up to, you know, a couple of hundred. But essentially, again, it was all about this kind of symbolism. And one of those big things as well that we kind of see in the show, when they pull up the stag and they kind of tie it down and the king uses a spit, it's this kind of ritual. Because although, you know, when we think of, like, I guess, like, hunting nowadays, when you've kind of let all the pheasants go across and people shoot them, it was kind of a bit different. You did have that. You would have these podiums where people would stand and shoot from, because that's where we see William the Second get killed by a stray arrow. But you also had this ritualistic hunt, which was called Parfois de Chien, basically the unmaking using dogs. So you would have dogs run and kind of take down a boar or a stag, and then you would decapitate it and skin it and go through this ritual whilst, you know, drinking and all this other stuff. And it was called the unmaking.
Well, in Game of Thrones, we see Tywin skinning a deer himself.
Yeah, and so it was very much so part of this kind of ritual. So it was just this kind of aristocratic bouginess, and we see elements of that in the show, I think, not in, you know, in bits and pieces, not as blatant as I think, but again, it kind of all plays into this idea of the medieval imagination and the medieval fantasy, which arises from the Arthurian tales, for instance, Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, which talks about deer pucks and everything. And so people try to imitate it, which is really interesting when you think about it, because it's almost like, I don't know, medieval people trying to be medieval. It's like an odd thing, you know?
And it's kind of like weird that we now also fantasize medieval times as
Whereas they were doing that then as well. So it's,
Yeah, it's very, well, you could say we're still doing it now.
Where
people act like they think it's like meant to happen, But not get into that.
That's for another episode.
One thing that popped into my head as you were talking.
Go for it.
When you mentioned the Duke of Lancaster,
Yeah.
That's one thing we don't see much of in Game of Thrones. Kind of like cadet houses. We get a few of them. The Starks have a few of them quite often, because you get the Carr Starks and you also get the Grey Starks of down by Whitehall, but they die out, and then they have a lot of bastards that end up holding lions and stuff. And we see it a bit with the Tyrells. We know, like, they're all called Tyrells still, but some of them end up Hightower Tyrells.
Yeah.
And some houses you see it a lot with, like, the Lannisters. You see, like, the Lannister, the Lannisters of Lannisport, the Lannisters of...
Of course,
And, like, but you don't see as much as it, I think, as you did in real life.
Yeah, I think that is interesting. And also, I mean, you kind of see it in Game of Thrones when...
Well, they never last as long.
Yeah.
They have like a cadet branch, and except like two or three occasions, they only last about three generations. Where with us, obviously, Fitzjoy is any bastard of the king.
Yeah.
But like some of those lines last all the way down. Yeah. Like, you know that Princess Diana was a bastard of, is a descendant of a bastard of King Charles II.
Mm.
And
another one, but I can't remember.
But it is kind of, I guess you could argue that, I suppose Game of Thrones, the world of Game of Thrones is like a condensed version then. Because I also think as well, you don't necessarily see as much of this kind of feudal hierarchy as you do in real life. You see, like, when...
You do.
But, like, you have your, like, big places, like Castle Landing, and you have, like, Dragonstone, and, Winterfell. Yeah. Sorry, what? Castle Landing? King's Landing, and Winterfell and stuff like that. And you kind of see it when... Like I say, when in Game of Thrones, when I think it was when Jon was going around trying to get people on his side, you do see kind of like dukes and everything. But I don't know, it doesn't appear to be as dense as I guess it was in real life.
Well, in the north, you don't see it because it's very sparse there.
Yeah.
But there's my favourite Game of Thrones books, The Duncan Egg.
Of course.
As you've heard before. And that's about a hedge knight, which again is a kind of amazing. It's a non-landed knight. Who's wandering around. He volunteers services at different castles, and in one of them he's volunteering in this tiny little town, literally a castle which is bare, like, you couldn't call that a castle, tower house maybe at a push. It's like four stories, floor in each, a room in each story, the solar and like the bedroom at the top, like a hall thing, a kitchen, and like a basement. And like the guy there used to, like, that his family owned more castles, but they don't anymore. And then he goes to a minor lord's castle, which is like only like four turrets. And then he's got. And then they talk about that lord's castle, which is Golden Grove, and that's like a bigger castle. And then that lord's liege is the Tyrells. So we do have those layers in there. And they are in the books are mentioned a lot more.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more like prying for, like, so it's like they go like, oh, this person, like, there is like Targaryens, major lords such as the Starks, Tullys, all of those.
Yeah.
Then we've got minor lord, not necessarily minor lords, but lords that are like, some of them are really strong, like the Hightowers are lords, they're not major lords. But they're quite strong as they go.
Yeah.
And then they've got mine lords under them, and then some of them have more mine lords under them, and then knights and so we do. It's not as outset as like the titles of like baron, earl, duke. The closest thing you, they're all called lord, and I think the closest thing you have is I can't remember what the local, like the regional lords are called. But there's like, there is a name for the regional lords. But yeah, like, we don't see it as much.
Yeah.
But it's also, we don't see it as much because they don't say it as much because the different kingdoms had different... No, similar to like how now we got Scotland, England, Wales,
Scotland.
But we have Scotland, Wales and Ireland, and they all have completely different heraldry.
I get you.
It's the same with the Seven Kingdoms.
Ah, okay. Well, interesting stuff.
Yeah.
So... Character of the week.
So I've changed up a bit this week.
Here we go.
I chose to pick three characters that we're going to see a lot of.
Oh my
god. It's House Strong. So we've already seen the Strong Daddy. The Daddy Strong. He's the master of coin.
Yeah.
For the series. The only one to give unbiased counsel, it seems, so far.
Interesting.
From what my opinion.
Any particular reason why we think that is, or just a character?
He's just a decent guy.
Ah, fair enough.
Yeah, he's just a decent guy.
Yeah.
He's the Lord of Harrenhal. Okay. It is a very old family, but I don't know what they owned before Harrenhal, because they say, oh, it's a first man family. So, they, like, cause in the Game of Thrones, the simple names Stark, Reed, Strong are first men. The more complicated names, Lannister, Tyrell, Aaron or Baelman. There's a good way of seeing the difference.
Okay, interesting.
And then he's got two sons and some daughters, but we don't care about them.
Mm.
So we got Breakbones, who is his oldest son, who is a very good knight.
Yeah.
But he ends up getting called in Broken Bones in a tournament that hopefully comes up because someone beats the hell out of him.
He better have a good gorget.
Well, I think it's shoulder that goes as well.
Oh god.
And then he's got his other son, the Clubfoot. We do have the names, but I currently, so we got Hargrin, Strong, the Breakbones is captain of the guards, and we got Larry Strong, who becomes the confessor. He's so at the moment his
dad's massive lords. His brother is captain of the guards and the gold cloaks.
Yeah.
And he is a confessor for the master of laws. So we don't really know what that does. We know it involves torture sometimes.
Okay.
And then he becomes master of secrets later on. But he's got a club foot. He's the one we see with the with the messed up leg. So yeah, that's him. So very old family, owner of Harrenhal. We're gonna have a fire. Some of them will die. But they're all very prominent coming up. So they're ones to keep an eye out for, I think.
Keep
an eye out for the strong ones.
Well, there we go. Another fabulous, fabulous podcast. And what do we think about the series so far? Is it getting better each episode, do we think?
No, I don't think it is. I think it started off pretty well. I think it dipped a little bit, but they're very much just building the world around it. So
fair enough.
It's like they're not the most... And they are trying to keep them reasonably active each episode, and not every episode is going to be a stunner. It's often the last three episodes of the season which are the best, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see how it goes, but I think very good start. Every episode's a solid 8 out of 10, if not higher, and if we keep this, it's going to be...
It's going to be a good one.
Just as good as Game of Thrones season 3, 4-ish.
Fair enough. Yeah. Well... There we go. Thank you ever so much for watching, as always. And be sure to explore the channel where I talk about history, and we also have some podcast interviews which kind of connect in. For instance, the one with James Wright, who is an archaeologist about castles. So you'll be able to see a bit more about symbolism of castles and wealth and deer parks.
About 30. If anyone ever wants to talk about the castles in Game of Thrones, I can. It's ridiculously written descriptions, but yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Right, goodbye.
See ya.